12. 3 hours later, it had taken his attorney that long to get a judge of the Superior Court to sign the writ, he boarded a pneumatic tube null-lapse train and shot from New York down the coast to Festung, Washington, D.C. The trip took 80 seconds, including braking time. The next he knew, he was in downtown Pennsylvania Avenue surface traffic, moving at an abalone's pace toward the dinky, transcendentally modest above-surface edifice, which acted as an entrance to the authentic subsurface Kremlin of Festung, Washington, D.C. At 5:30 p.m., he stood with Dr. Tote before a neat young air-arm officer who held a laser rifle and silently presented his writ. It took a little time. The writ had to be read, studied, certified, initialed by a sequence of office holders left over from Harding's administration. But at last he found himself with Dr. Tote descending by silent hydraulic elevator to the subsurface, the very subsurface, levels below. With them in the elevator was a captain from the Army who looked wan and tense.
"How'd you make it in here?"
the captain asked him. Evidently he was a dispatch runner or some such fool thing.
"How'd you get all that security fnug?"
Lars said, "I lied." There was no more conversation. The elevator doors opened. The three of them exited. Lars, with Dr. Tote, who had been silent throughout the entire trip and ordeal of presenting the writ, walked and walked until they reached the last and most elaborate security barrier, which sealed off the UN-W NATSEC board in session within its chambers. The weapon, which here and now pointed directly at him and Dr. Tote, came, he realized with pride, from a design emanating from Mr. Lars Incorporated. Through a meager slot in the transparent but impenetrable ceiling-to-floor bulkhead, he presented all his documents. On the far side, a civilian official, grizzled, bent with canny experience, with even wisdom engraved on his raptor-like features, inspected Lars' ident papers and the writ. He pondered for an excessive time, but perhaps it was not excessive. Who could say in a situation like this? By means of a wall speaker, the ancient, efficient official said,
"You may go in, Mr. Powderdry, but the person with you can't."
"My doctor,"
Lars said. The grizzled old official said,
"I don't care if he's your mother."
The bulkhead parted, leaving an opening just wide enough for Lars to squeeze through. At once, an alarm bell clanged.
"You're armed,"
the old official said philosophically, and held out his hand.
"Let me have it."
From his pockets, Lars brought every object out for inspection.
"No arms," he said. "Keys, ballpoint pen, coins, see?" "Leave everything there."
The old official pointed. Lars saw a window open in the wall. Through it, a hard-eyed female clerk was extending a small wire basket. Into the basket he dumped the entire contents of his pockets, and then, upon instruction, his belt with its metal buckle, and last of all, dreamlike, he thought, his shoes. In his stocking feet he padded on to the big chamber room, and, without Dr. Tote, opened the door and entered. At the table, General Nitz's chief aide, Mike Dalbrowski, also a general but three-star, glanced up at him. Expressionlessly, he nodded in greeting and pointed, peremptorily, at a seat vacant beside him. Lars padded over and noiselessly accepted the seat. The discussion continued with no pause, no acknowledgment of his entrance. An ACPROP man, Gene-something, had the floor. He was on his stocking feet, gesticulating and talking in a high-pitched squeak. Lars put on an expression of solemn attention, but in reality, he simply felt tired. He was, within himself, resting. He had gotten in. What happened now appeared to him an anticlimax.
"Here's Mr. Lars,"
General Nitz interrupted Gene something all at once, startling Lars. He sat up at once, keeping himself from visibly jerking.
"I got here as quickly as I could," he said stupidly.
General Nitz said,
"Mr. Lars, we told the Russians that we knew they were lying, that they'd put BX-3, our code for the new SAT, up there, that they had violated Section 10 of the Plowshare Protocols of 2002, that within 1 hour, if they did not acknowledge having launched it into its orbit, we intended to release a G-to-A miss and knock it down. There was silence. General Nitz seemed to be waiting for Lars to say something. So Lars said, "And what did the Soviet government reply?"
"They replied," General Mike Dalbrowski said, "that they would be happy to turn over their own tracking station's data on the sat so that our missile could get an exact fit on it, and they have done so. In fact, they supplied additional material spontaneously as to a warping field which their instruments had detected and ours had not. A distortion surrounding BX-3, kept there evidently for the purpose of misleading a thermotropic missile."
"I thought you sent up a team of robot weapon percept extensors," Lars said. After a pause, General Nitz said,
"If you live to be 100, Lars, you will say to everyone you ever meet, including me, that there was no team of robot percept extensors sent up, and that since this is the case, the fabrication that this team was vaporized is the invention of rancid homeopathic reporters, or if that doesn't do it, the deliberate sensation-mongering invention of that TV personality, what's his name?"
"Lucky Bagman,"
said Molly Newman, one of the Concomitants. "That a creature like Bagman would naturally dream it up to keep his audience deluded into believing he has a conduit to Festung W here," he added, "which he doesn't, whether they like it or not." After a pause, Lars said,
"What now, General?"
"What now?"
General Nitz clapped his hands together before him atop the pile of memoranda, microdocs, reports, abstracts, ribbon style that covered his share of the great table.
"Well, Lars?"
He glanced up, the weary carrot-like face corrupted with utterly unforeseen, unimaginable, feckless amusement.
"As strange as it may sound, Lars, somebody in this room, somebody a bona fide participant of this meeting, actually suggested, you'll laugh, suggested we try to get you to go into one of your song and dance acts, you know, with the banjo and blackface, your..."
The carrot-like features writhed.
"Trances? Can you obtain a weapon from hyperdimensional space, Lars? Honestly now, can you get us something to take out BX-3? Now, Lars, please don't pull my leg. Just quietly say no, and we won't vote you out of here. We'll just quietly go on and try to think of something else."
Lars said,
"No, I can't."
For a moment, General Nitz's eyes flickered. It was possibly, but not very probably, compassion. Whatever it was, it lasted only an instant. Then the sardonic glaze reinstated itself.
"Anyhow, you're honest, which is what I asked for. Ask for a no answer, get a no answer."
He laughed barkingly.
"He could try,"
a woman named Min Dosker said in an oddly high, ladylike voice.
"Yes,"
Lars agreed, taking the bit before General Nitz could seize it and run with it.
"Let me clarify. I..."
"Don't clarify," General Nitz said slowly. "Please, as a favor to me personally. Mrs. Dosker, Lars, is from Sirkeb. I failed to tell you, but..." He shrugged. "So, in view of that fact, don't treat us to an interminable recitation of how you can operate and what you can and can't do. We're not being entirely candid because of Mrs. Dosker's presence here." To the Sirkeb rep, General Nitz said, "You understand, don't you, Min?"
"I still think," Mrs. Dosker said, "that your weapons medium could try."
She rattled her microdocs irritably.
"What about yours?" General Dalbrowski demanded. "The Top Chef girl."
"I am informed," Mrs. Dosker said, "that she is..."
She hesitated. Obviously, she too was constrained to be to some extent reticent.
"Dead," General Nitz grated.
"Oh, no,"
Mrs. Dosker said, and looked horrified, like a Baptist Sunday school teacher shocked by an improper word.
"A strain probably killed her," Nitz said lazily.
"No, Miss Topchef is in shock. She fully understands the situation, however. She is under sedation at the Pavlov Institute at New Moscow, and for the time being she can't work, but she's not dead."
When? One of the concomitants, a male nullity, asked her. Will she be out of shock soon? Can you predict?
Within hours, we hope,
Mrs. Dosker said emphatically.
All right, General Nitt said in a sudden brisk voice.
He rubbed his hands together, grimaced, showing his yellow, irregular, natural teeth. Speaking to Lars, he said,
Powder dry, Mr. Lars, whatever you are. I'm glad you came here. I truly am. I knew you would. People like you can't stand being hung up on.
What kind of person, Lars began, but General Bronstein, seated at the far side of General Dobrowski, shot him a look that made him cease, and God forbid, flush. General Nitt said,
When were you last at Fairfax, Iceland?
6 years ago, Lars said.
Before that?
Never.
You want to go there?
I'd go anywhere. I'd go to God. Yes, I'll be glad to go.
Fine, General Nitz nodded. She ought to be out of shock by, say, midnight Washington time. Right, Mrs. Dosker?
I'm positive,
the Sirkeb rep said, her head wobbling up and down like a vast colorless pumpkin on its thick stalk. Ever tried working with another weapons medium? An ACPROP. It would be an ACPROP, man asked Lars.
No.
Happily, he was able to keep his voice steady.
But I'll be pleased to pool my ability and years of experience with Miss Topchev's. As a matter of fact,
he hesitated until he could find a political way of finishing his utterance.
I've speculated for some time that such a merger might be highly profitable for both blocks.
General Nitz said, deliberately offhandedly,
We have this psychiatrist at Wallingford Clinic. There are currently 3 new proposed weapons media. Is that the proper plural? No? Who are relatively untested, but whom we could draw on.
To Lars, he said with abrupt bluntness,
You wouldn't like that, Mr. Lars. You wouldn't want that at all. So we'll spare you that, for the time being.
With his right hand, General Nitz made a tick-like gesture. At the far end of the chamber, a youthful U.S. commissioned officer bent and clicked on a vidset. Speaking into an ingrafted throat microphone, the officer conferred with persons not present in the room. Then, straightening, he pointed to the vidset indicating that now it, whatever it was, could be considered ready. On the vidset formed a face, a mystifying source of human essence, wavering slightly in indication that the signal was being relayed from a quite distant spot via a satellite. Pointing at Lars, General Nitz said,
Can our boy put his head together with your girl?
On the vidscreen, the far-distant eyes of the wavering face scrutinized Lars, while at his microphone the young officer translated.
No,
the face on the screen said.
Well, why not, Marshal?
Nitz said. It was the face of Peep East's highest dignitary and holder of power, the chairman of the Central Committee of the Communist Party, as well as secretary of the Sirkeb. The man on the screen, deciding against the fusion, was the Soviet Marshal of the Red Army, Maxim Popanovich. And that man, overruling every other living person in the world on this matter, said,
We must keep her from the publicity. She is poorly, you know, sick. I regret. It is a shame.
And cat-like, Popanovich, with smoldering eyes, surveyed Lars for his reaction as if reading him out of a well-broken, long-known code. Rising respectfully to his feet, Lars said,
Marshal Popanovich, you're making a dreadful error. Miss Topchev and I can be looked to for redress. Is the Soviet Union opposed to the search for remedy in this bad situation?
The face, tangibly hating him, continued to confront him from the screen.
If I'm not permitted to cooperate with Miss Topchev, Lars said, I will shore up the security of West Block and call it quits. I'm asking you now to change your mind for the protection of the billions of people of Peep East, and I'm prepared to make public the nature of our attempt to compile our separate talents
despite what this formal board may instruct. I have direct access to info media such as the Lucky Bagman interviewers, and your refusal...
Yes, Marshal Popanovich said. Miss Topchev will be at Fairfax Island within the next 24 hours.
And the look on his face said, you made us do only what we intended to do, and you have taken all of the responsibility, so that if it fails, it is on you. So we have won. Thank you.
Thank you, Marshal, Lars said, and reseated himself. He did not give a damn whether or not he had been skillfully manipulated. What mattered was that within the next 24 hours, he would meet Lilo Topchev at last.